If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music, plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. And right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for just $1. Go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required.
This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156.
Welcome to the Busted Open Podcast. This is Dave LaGreca. On today's episode, WWE Hall of Famer Bully Ray and I welcome the greatest of all time to the show and discuss WWE Super Showdown from last week in Jeddah. That's right, the 16-time world's champion and two-time WWE Hall of Famer, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, joins us in this exclusive interview about his recent health issues and why he wants to go back to being Ric Flair. Plus, The Undertaker and Goldberg were in the main event of WWE Super Showdown this past Friday, but all anyone wants to talk about are the final 90 seconds of the match. We'll break down exactly what happened in the ring in Jeddah. All that right now on the Busted Open Podcast. Goldberg and Undertaker, for a first time ever, and everyone's talking about it, probably for all the wrong reasons. And the last 90 seconds, Bully, was not pretty. But you're talking about two legends, especially when it comes to The Undertaker. A lot of criticism towards Goldberg. And if you really watch that match again, I think a lot of people, if they gave it a second glance, might be, instead of criticizing Goldberg, might be praising Goldberg after what especially happened 2 minutes into that matchup, Bully.
I got to tell you, for all those criticizing Goldberg, you try to do what he did. You try to do what any of those other guys do out there. You try to have a main event level match and get your bell rung in the third minute and try to plow through. Goldberg could have very easily have turned around to the ref or the Taker and says, I'm out. Let's get this over with. He didn't do that. He plowed through. He tried. He tried to perform for everybody. There's got to be something to say about that. That's a man's man right there. He could have took the easy way out. Probably made $1 million for the night, right, Dave?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Hell of a payday. I mean, it's basically an a la carte show, you know? That, you know, this Prince guy or whatever, at least from what I understand, basically tells everybody, you know, tells Vince, I'd like to see this. And then the WWE tries to make it happen. Hey, let's get Goldberg versus this guy. Money's not an object, so we'll just throw it around. And before I get into breaking that down, I want your opinion on something, because here's the biggest mistake I think the WWE made with Super Showdown. They called it bigger than WrestleMania. What about Super Showdown gave you the perception, even the tiniest bit of a perception, that this was a bigger event than WrestleMania?
It was a really nice card, and it's in a stadium, and they had tons and tons of pyro. So the look is there, but this was not a WrestleMania show. I mean, WrestleMania, that's the elite card of the calendar for the WWE. That's the gold standard, Bully. You got to stay away from that.
Why would you even go near it?
You shouldn't, because what that does to me, it lessens the value of WrestleMania. If you're wanting people to subscribe to the network and they tuned into that show, which was, let's face it, top to bottom, was a good show. It was good. But that was not a great, fantastic show by any stretch of the imagination. And if you're telling people that it's as big or maybe even bigger than WrestleMania, and then we get what we got this past Friday, I think that lessens the value of WrestleMania, in my opinion.
To me, it doesn't lessen the value of WrestleMania. It's just blatantly, lying for the hopes of people watching the show. This is not WrestleMania. WrestleMania happens once a year. Nothing about this show gave me that WrestleMania-esque feel. It's because I know what it is. And maybe that's because I'm quote unquote smart to what it is. Maybe the average wrestling fan doesn't know. So they'll allow themselves to be convinced that, oh my God, this is going to be a bigger show than WrestleMania. We have to subscribe to the network. I'd stay away from all the WrestleMania comparisons. That was one of my problems with the show. Now, what do you want to know specifically about Goldberg and Taker?
Well, you said that, and obviously 2 minutes in, Goldberg hits his head on the post, gets busted open, gets his bell rung, and he still looks strong. Now, most people watching back, and they said the last 90 seconds of that match was not pretty. And everyone goes back to that jackhammer from Goldberg on The Undertaker as where things went awry. When you go back and look at that match, the trained eye, the professional wrestler, when you go back and watch that match, where did things in your eyes go awry?
Before the jackhammer. There's a point in the match where Taker puts Goldberg up on his shoulders and gives him a move called Snake Eyes.
Yes.
And every wrestling fan out there knows what the Snake Eyes is. It's when you got the guy on the shoulder and you drop his head onto the top turnbuckle. Goldberg took that move. Nothing happened on that move. He took it properly. Taker then hit the ropes, and Goldberg hit Taker with that third spear. That third spear took a lot out of Goldberg. That blew him up pretty good. When you go back and watch, right after that spear, you see Goldberg with his head down, and he's gasping for air right there. It took a lot out of him. And right then and there, if you were playing a video game and there was like a strength meter on Goldberg, you would have seen it drop tremendously. Right there is when the gas tank was empty. So now Goldberg starts to pick up Taker. And he's going to go for the jackhammer. And I watched this about 100 times. And just to make sure I wasn't wrong, I went back and I watched old clips of Goldberg doing his jackhammer. This is a move that I have taught in my wrestling school. This is a move that, just like any other move, has certain mechanics. You have to do things a certain way. And not just one guy. Both guys have to do things a certain way. Every move is 50-50. You have 50% of the responsibility, and the other guy has 50% of the responsibility. And if both guys do their 50% correctly, you'll get 100% of the move. You didn't get 50-50 here. If you go back and watch, when Goldberg gets ready to hit the jackhammer, when he picks Taker up, Taker's legs do not go straight up into the air. Taker's legs they point at like 10 o'clock. Like if you were looking at a clock, mm-hmm. His legs go to 10 o'clock. When that weight is away from you, it's very hard to control. But the mistake that Goldberg made almost instantaneously is when he picked up Taker, Goldberg stepped forward. You're not supposed to step forward. At the end of the day, the beginning of this move is a vertical suplex. Goldberg's feet are supposed to stay exactly where they are until Taker is in the vertical position. Goldberg picks up Taker and instantaneously steps forward, thus stepping underneath him and offsetting the balance of the move. I'm doing my best to paint a mental picture here for people.
I think you're doing a great job, because I can picture in my head everything that happened during that jackhammer.
So in a perfect world, Dave, Goldberg wants us now. And I even went back and watched Goldberg jackhammer Big Show, in WCW. It's picture perfect. Everything goes straight up into the air. Goldberg's feet never leave the position that they're in. He gets Big Show vertical and then does the power slam-esque finish. Not against Taker. The minute Goldberg gets Taker off the mat, Goldberg takes 2 definitive steps forward. And as soon as you do that, the weight is unbalanced and you come crashing down. Now, do I put the blame on one or the other? I never put the blame on any one person in a match, unless it is definitively that person's fault. I told a story last week how I busted open Undertaker years ago with a chair shot. That was definitively 100% my fault. this move is not definitively 100% Goldberg's fault because Taker's legs were sticking out at 10 o'clock. Did Taker mean for his legs to be there? No. Were they there? Yes. Were they there because Goldberg stepped in too soon? Possibly. Nevertheless, both guys were off just a little bit. Actually, let me take that back. Goldberg was more off in that move than Taker was. If Taker's legs would have went straight into the air as opposed to out, we might have seen a different move. I don't think we would have, because once Goldberg takes that step forward, that's it. Done.
All bets are off.
All bets are off. You're coming straight down. Any of these moves that you see happen, Dave, whether a vertical suplex or a power slam, or you take any move where both guys are executing them, both guys have a responsibility to said move. Each guy has to do their part perfectly. Think about trapeze artists in the circus. You have one guy who flies through the air and the other guy who catches, right?
Yes.
If their timing is off, if they're not doing their 50% of the job at any given moment, what could happen?
It's going to be an accident.
They're going to crash and burn.
Yep.
And that's what happened in that moment in time with the jackhammer. If you go back and watch any of let's take the biggest jackhammer of all time against the Big Show. Watch how Goldberg gets him up in the air, and Goldberg stays right where he is. His feet never move forward. Then go back and watch Taker's. He picks up Taker, and he steps forward. Right then and there is when the move went wrong.
Like what you're hearing? Catch Busted Open live weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, Channel 156. Or on demand with the SiriusXM app.
Rick, how are you today?
I'm great. Good morning. How are you?
What do you say, Nate? How are you?
Good, Bubba. How are you, man?
I'm great. And as always, it is great to hear you. God bless you.
Thanks. Hey, this time I'm taking the time off to make sure it heals up. So I actually feel the best I have felt, guys, in 10 years.
And you know what? Listening to your voice, you sound great. You sound healthy.
I feel great. I could go out and I can't work out yet just because what most people don't know, and which I'm willing to open up to now, is I had a total of four different surgeries, and the fourth being three weeks ago today. But I didn't tell anybody about them except, you know, my wife and family. Not even tell Ashley because I don't want her to worry about it. But they were procedures. They went in the first time and looked for blockage. I had none. Second time, they put me to sleep and they tried to shock my heart back where it was going into AFib. If you understand anything about medicine, where it was into an irregular heartbeat. That lasted 2 days. And then the third time I had what's called an ablation, where they go in, it's like soldering some stuff in your heart that holds it together. And I was great for 3 days that time, but it didn't work. So the last technique, I went in, and it happened in the middle of the night on Wednesday night 3 weeks ago, that I couldn't breathe. And it had been bothering me for a couple of days, but this was to the point where I couldn't walk like 10 steps. I felt great about sitting down, but I couldn't breathe. So the only way to get myself in the hospital and follow protocol because of the number of people ahead of me was to go to the emergency room. And even though I was there just straight through, like maybe 30 seconds from door to door, somebody took a picture of me, and that's why it went upside down. But then I got there, and I'm actually glad I went. They found a blood clot that had been in my leg that broke off that went to my lung. So we got that taken care of. That's why the surgery was put off for 3 days. Massive amounts of intravenously of blood thinner, and that was cured up. And then I had fluid on my heart as a result of anesthesia from the three other surgeries. I'm giving this to you as I'm learning, okay? So we had what call was congestive heart failure. So I was taking massive Lasix and actually like lost 9 pounds over the weekend. Just fluid. Because I've taken Lasix before, but I always drank, 20 drinks. So it balanced out. So, and I actually came home and didn't do anything. And have it. I went to one signing for Seth Rollins and his friend, which I really enjoyed. But I'm not going back to work until Friday. And this time I'm letting it heal up. Like, after I shocked my heart, I got on a plane and flew to London for a signing with all the guys. Because I look forward so much now to seeing all the guys. It was actually in Liverpool, and Brett was there, and Kevin Nash and Bischoff and Scott Hall and Waltman and Jericho was, and I'm sure Bubba feels the same way. And Bubba, you're probably just, 38 now? That doesn't matter. You're a kid. You're a young guy.
Yes, sir.
And 30 years from now, you'll really appreciate these moments if you're still here. And with me not in your life, that's probably more probable.
That's a good point.
So, anyway, I'm just saying, I feel great. It's unbelievable. Boy, it gave me a whole new understanding of these kids. Not kids, these elderly people that have emphysema. They can't breathe. Holy crap, it's brutal. I mean, you can't take 10 steps. But I'm great. Thus far, I'm knocking on every piece of wood in the house. Thus far, everything is great. But I'm actually doing what the doctor said. So, and it's working, and hopefully it will continue to be like this, and I'll have another 20 years to have fun with you guys. I'll take 10, but I want 20.
Nate, it's great to hear you in such good spirits. Yep. Like Dave
said,
you sound awesome. I gotta ask you though. About 2 weeks ago, I definitely will. With all due respect, 2 weeks ago, you went on that crazy rant right before you went to go do the signing for Seth Rollins, and you said something to the effect that if I want to have a beer, I'll have two, and I'm leading the life that I want to lead, and if I want to be Ric Flair, I'm going to be Ric Flair. Can you give us a little bit more insight into basically what you said?
Okay, that's a great question because I was hoping you'd ask that. Here's the deal. I came so close to dying in 17. I don't think people understand. Like 20% chance to live, septic, pneumonia, congestive heart failure, da 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 da, and everybody blamed it on alcohol. Well, what happened was I'd had surgery 3 years prior to that, actually three surgeries. One, an emergency appendectomy, and I've learned this through asking 50 different doctors, trust me. Emergency appendectomy, where I sat up in bed because I didn't want to stay in the hospital, got a hernia, another surgery for that, and through that I got the intestinal blockage. So three surgeries in 11 days. So it's like one in a million. I've heard this from three different doctors that type of problem can come back. So apparently I did something that day or in the prior couple days to August 14th of 17, where I did something to caused that, because I went septic. I got a leak in my intestine. And yes, my system was probably worn down from all the drinking, but what caused it was a one in a million situation where the intestine can start leaking again. That's what makes you septic, and septic is what can kill you. Oh, I had kidney failure too. It's just major. So it took them, 2 days to get me ready for surgery, and then they had to put me in a coma. And then, so anyway, getting to your question, I decided this time when I woke up that I got nothing to lose. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I am going to not drink 2 beers and have an anxiety attack anymore. You know what I mean? I mean, that's where I was. If the first time I drank a beer or anything was at my wedding, and the 2 or 3 beers and a glass of champagne that I had, I went upstairs and the anxiety was so bad that it wasn't worth drinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found out that the drinking isn't what did it. The drinking, yes, has worn down my immune system, but it's a result of the going septic. And so after 4 surgeries where they put you to sleep, and that's the unknown, right? I mean, you just never know if you're going to wake up. And that's a given, especially when you've had that many surgeries. And especially as you get older, anesthesia, it can be complicated. There can be complications. I just said to myself, hell, I'm going to say what I think and what I feel. And I actually had to sit back down and rest for 2 days after I made that. But I was just making a point because I was losing business opportunities left and right because people were thinking, maybe he's not ever going to come around. And I had to do something that showed some energy because I felt that good. And I feel even better now. And I just wanted to be energized and show people that I still had it and could be entertaining and have fun. And that's what came from, not losing opportunities that I have coming up in the future, especially for brand endorsement, where I've got to be at myself for those 3-day filming shoots, like I did for a company recently out of New England. So anyway, that's what brought that on.
And I'm sure, like, where you're coming from is that there's, I guess, certain expectations when it's Ric Flair. They're expecting Ric Flair. And I'm sure that's what you want to give your fans and the public.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, I've had to slow everything down. I get that. But Bubba will tell you this because, we not only have been friends for years, but he is an old school guy. I have put my body through a lot more than most guys in our business, even though I was never a hardcore guy. I mean, backdrops, upside down, whatever. I even did a couple of those ladder matches when I was in my mid-50s with Edge or with Matt Hardy or somebody giving me the bumps because I wasn't qualified to give them any. You know what I mean? So, and it worked out. I wasn't afraid to do it, but I was afraid I'd hurt somebody because I didn't know how to do anything off a ladder. At whatever age you reach in this business, the day you're afraid of getting hurt is the day you need to walk away. And I think Bubba will attest to that. Bubba obviously hasn't reached that point, and he's still young, and he's still active. He can go through a table tomorrow. He's lucky, look at Mick Foley. Mick, not so lucky. Not that he's not living a good quality of life, but he's lucky, and he's probably in pain, in a considerable amount of pain daily that he won't admit to, because I don't, I know he's not a drug guy. He's not going to load up on drugs and that, because he lives too clean. But I look at Hulk, who was in pain 24/7. The guys with, you know, continued back surgeries, ongoing hip injuries, hip replacement, knee replacements. I mean, I have none of that. And I've crashed in an airplane, cracked C5, my neck, had two rotator cuffs, had a lump on my back they thought was cancer as a result of the airplane crash, hit by lightning, and in these two deals, or these five operations, well, not five, eight counting at 3 and 15, and I'm still here. So, it's like I posted this morning, I'm not making a joke because I'm having so much fun with this YouTube stuff, social media. I'm glad we're talking because I got, anyway, I'm having so much fun with it. I said, God's guarding the pearly gates and the devil's afraid of me. So
they're keeping you on earth, Rick, as long as possible.
I hope so. Hey, this social media stuff, I'm just starting to get the hang of it. I had to call Ed yesterday and say, tell me Becky Lynch isn't really shooting on you. My God, it was pissing me off. He goes, "Lo, Rick, it's a work." Well, you faked out the niche.
Well, you just exposed that one, Rick.
No, I, you know what I'm saying? I exposed it. The important thing is they had me, okay?
They had the hook in your mouth.
Yeah, that's the important thing. And here's the funny thing. Kevin Nash says it best, and I love this explanation for me. I'm the last traveling world champion. And it's the truth. If you look at where I've been, the traveling world champion was really a shoot. It was. And I wasn't tough enough to be that guy. I was half tough, when you're the traveling world champion and you're going to Japan and you're going overseas and wrestling against people that you've never heard of, I mean, I feel horrible. David Ortiz shot last night in the Dominican Republic, right?
Yep.
Can I tell you, after being there and almost getting killed twice, wrestling Jack Veneno in the 80s, and taking Piper back the second time where they almost killed us both again. Dominican Republic is a tough place. And now, you know, people just think that you can go into these islands and everything is like Hollywood. It's not the case. These are tough. And they, you know, for whatever reason, and I know David well. As a matter of fact, he used always says to me, "Oh, I love you. I grew up watching you." I mean, as do so many of the great Dominican baseball players, that I see, you know, in and out of different events. And it was tough back then. I mean, I was in St. Croix one night when the cops were breaking up a match with me and Carlos Colon, and somebody shot the horse the cop was on. You know, I'm over in Japan, and I'm literally getting stretched every night. You know, because those guys, to be the NWA champion, they weren't messing around with Jack Briscoe. They weren't messing around with Terry Funk. They most certainly weren't messing around with Harley, with me, you know. They didn't feel, they weren't intimidated, let me put it like that. And I had to do that all the time. And that, you know, I'm wrestling Brody for an hour in Japan. And a week later, I wrestled Brody for an hour in St. Louis. Sold out, Checkerdome. And 2 weeks later, I'm wrestling, because the ring didn't show up, in Iowa against Bob Brown for an hour on a high school wrestling mat with ropes around it.
See, this is, Bully, this is kind of like when you have a discussion about a football player. With Ric Flair, it's kind of like you're talking about Tom Brady, because Tom Brady's never played a 16-game season because he's always in the playoffs and he's most likely always in the Super Bowl. It's the same thing with Ric Flair. He wasn't having 10, 15-minute matches. Every time he stepped into a ring, he was having a 60-minute match. So that has to factor in when you look back at the career of Ric Flair.
Well, absolutely. Not only that, but a couple of times, you know, counting one on Sunday or on Wednesday and two on Saturday and Sunday, I can think of three occasions, that would be 9 hours in 1 week with Ricky Morton and Steamboat. Don't misunderstand me. A walk in the park in terms of the talent I was with. But there's a lot of times, a lot of guys, an hour was a long night, especially in front of 150 people. So, and then getting back to what I was saying is that I've had to be so guarded because of what, you know, you can't say what you say, God forbid, about, I can't brag about Ashley. I couldn't because, you know, it's his daughter. Well, no, I'm sorry. I can say it because I know it. She's the best. You know,
we brag about her enough on this show, Rick. Trust me. We put her over to the moon because she has earned the right to be put over to the moon, and it has nothing to do with you.
Exactly. Here's the deal. And I'm so happy to say that because it's just, I'm at the point now where I'm not going to be guarded or I'm not going to go, qualify every statement, which I'm sure we find ourselves doing, and saying, I like the guy personally, but, you know, I'm done doing that. We're all adults, okay? And I'm so glad you're here to say that because she is the best, and I'm saying that just like Orton, when he wants to be, and I tell him right to his face, is the best if you factor in size, athletic ability, and their career, you know, right now to date. Seth Rollins is great, but he's not Randy Orton. Can he do more gymnastic stuff? Yes. If Orton had to do that, he could do it. Okay? And Seth is deceptively strong, which makes him unbelievable. That roll-through stuff he was doing with John Cena, it amazed me. And I text him. And the greatest compliment I can get, it's 8 words. I'll go, oh, thank you so much, Nate. That means a lot coming from you. Right?
Yep.
So that it's for me to be at a point in my life where I should be able to say what I say. I mean, I did Steve's podcast about 4 months ago, and I called him about 5 times. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. Maybe what I had said is, Ashley's not afraid of Ronda Rousey. Well, then I'm thinking, well, should I say that or not? You know what I mean? And I know the answer, she's not. But is it okay as her dad to say that? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. You're not saying it as her dad. You're saying it as Ric Flair, one of the greatest performers of all time.
But here's the deal. It's interpreted that way. And Bubba knows, because he's lived in that dressing room. It's like the other night, I text all the girls. Alexa Bliss is phenomenally entertaining. I find her to be so gifted. Carmella, actually, the match they had was entertaining. Alexa got to talk. I mean, it was just all three things. And going back to the women at 35, they deserved to be in the main event. And they had, and I hate this word, but they had arguably the best match at 12:30 at night. And here's the reason. Because they had the best storyline, but they ramped it up so high, they were beating each other up with these kendo sticks and chairs to the point where it was, you know, they were working. They looked like Brock beating up Seth with each other. That makes sense?
Yeah.
They took it to that level. You know, and I said, God,
Nate,
as a father, you don't want to see your daughter get the shit beat out of her, but that's what they were doing.
Nate, there's no
behind him.
There's no doubt that Ashley is doing the some of the best work in the WWE, as good as the men are doing, and she deserves all the props in the world, whether it's from me, whether it's from you, or anybody. She's earned them on her own. But I want to ask you about a different subject real quick. You just mentioned earlier on that you were 55 years old and you were wrestling in ladder matches or whatever you were doing. You were you know, gigged to the gills against Mick Foley and TNA. My question is, did you see the match Goldberg versus Undertaker?
I did.
Can we please get your thoughts on the match, whether or not you thought the match should happen, how the match went down, just your overall feeling, you know, from you?
Well, the overall feeling is this. They opened up hot. I loved it. And I loved the match up until the last minute and a half. And and here's the deal. Whatever you want to say about anybody in this business, he is going to be on Mount Rushmore, if there is one, or hype, whatever there. We keep hearing all this. You can say no wrong about The Undertaker, okay? He is a talent of a lifetime. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
we agree
and
with
Bill
you.
Bill Goldberg had arguably the greatest run of anybody for years, and has still never had anybody spend more than a half hour with him learning the fundamentals of the business. And he pulled it off. And I'm sure, you know, that he's brokenhearted. But I'm going to argue without anybody. I mean, it's tough. And it's not factored around age. When I was doing this stuff, I was still, they had me back in the ring on a regular basis. It is so hard to come in and work two or three times a year. It's hard. I mean, they're making a big deal about Kevin Durant coming in. Try taking 6 months off of wrestling and getting in the ring and climbing on a Stairmaster or an elliptical is not the answer to getting in the ring and going full speed. And I mean, that's my hats off to Hunter. I don't know how he does it. You know, I mean, I thought he and Randy Orton had a hell of a match.
Yep.
Old school, yes, but old school is new school. And it was a heavyweight match. Two contenders going at it, right? And they didn't miss a beat. You know what I mean? And Randy is working full time. Hunter works twice a year. That's hard to pull off.
You know, Rick, you're mentioning Triple H and Randy Orton, and I know you mentioned Randy Orton before, and I've said this on the show. Is Randy Orton underappreciated? Because when people talk about the greats of all times, they never really mention Randy Orton.
Let me tell you, Randy Orton blew by his dad, Bobby, who I love and talk to, you know, a couple times a year, just like Ashley blew by me, okay? And I don't care whether given the chance or not. I could never do what she's done. And, I mean, when I tell people that she could have gone to a Division I school for four different sports, I'm not lying. I was there. Track and field, gymnastics, not gymnastics because she only went to level 9. All-star cheerleading, but she didn't want to do it on a all-girls team. She wanted to be a flyer, and she's too tall. But scholarship reigned. And basketball, and then she ended up playing volleyball, which she didn't start playing until she was in the ninth grade. So there you go. She was a great at the 220. She ran a 513 mile in the ninth grade. Give me a break. But she didn't like it. You know, being her father, I cannot tell you how many times I had to go to school to tell a coach, leave her alone. You know, if she can't do three things, you know, you guys want her to, that's great. You know, then, you know what I mean? I finally moved her to public school because just because you're paying tuition in a private school doesn't mean you have any say when a coach wants to win. They want to win.
Rick, I just want to bring you back. I just want to bring you back real quick to this whole Goldberg versus Undertaker thing, and it has to deal with the respect level. A lot of fans on social media have been very vocal about Goldberg and whether or not Goldberg should have been in the ring and whether or not this match should have ever happened. How do you feel when fans are so blatantly disrespectful to a performer, despite the fact that that performer gave it his all and tried to be a warrior in that ring and pushed through?
Well, obviously, I don't like it, but that doesn't mean that they can't have their opinion. I think that, and I mean, I don't have an agenda here. I'm never going to stop telling you how good The Undertaker is, just like Bubba. Bubba couldn't say a bad word about The Undertaker if he wanted to. He's a man's man that has been, if example, point in case, if he had ever gone to WCW, and pulled up or became difficult, I mean, it could have changed the world. He was that big of an influence, you know. It's like, you know, it's, there are just some guys that are so damn good. And I can't let a minute or two as a result of fatigue define anybody. Because, you know, it's funny. If they had gone 1 minute more perfect and hit it, everybody be going, God, it was great. Because when I thought, oh, my God, they got me again. When he hit him with a spear, I said, here goes the Brock deal, right? And then he came out of it. I mean, I thought they started out great. And those same people that are critiquing this are when he was walking along the top rope, Taker, and dropping on his arm, we're going, God dang, he can still do it, right? Oh. What does their opinion mean? What, a minute and a half? I mean, Shawn Michaels carried me for 30, guys. And I get credit for being in that. The only thing I give myself credit for at WrestleMania 24 is being in the Citrus Bowl.
I think you did a little bit more than that.
No, guys, I swear to you. Shawn said to me, will you please just once in your life keep your mouth shut? With different verbiage, and let me do this. And then I went out there, and because I'm not used to doing that, I messed up a little bit, but he recovered. Nobody knew it. But I never said truer words. He carried me, and that's just the way it's going to be. And I'll take credit for being there. I think it's the greatest retirement weekend of any athlete in any sport. Whether it be baseball, football, I've been to Cooperstown, I've been to Canton, I've been everywhere like that. The 3 days for me, throwing in Raw, will be something that is special, and I don't see it being duplicated. And I've got nothing but the fondest memories. I think I went to TNA. Number one, I needed the money because I was going through multiple divorces. But I think I went there to drink with Bubba. I didn't accomplish. Bubba, tell Dave, what was the first thing I said to you when I saw you at TV?
Are you going to stay out tonight? Right, because I lived close to the building. Yeah, and whenever – basically, when you told me to go out, I didn't have a choice. I had to go drink red wine with Rick.
Oh, that's not true. You pulled up on me a couple times. Hey, let me think about it.
Yeah, but you did the same thing to me when I brought out the Jack Daniels.
Exactly. And I always will. Listen, with Taker, I lost one watch and damn near lost another.
You know, Rick, you mentioned, because you mentioned Shawn Michaels, and you mentioned before that, you know, the gloves are off, you know, after everything that you've been through, you're not going to bite your tongue anymore. You're going to be honest and truthful every time you have a microphone in your hand. You know, you had the second video on YouTube, and you mentioned Shawn Michaels that, you know, he was a little judgmental, and who is he to be judgmental? Why Shawn Michaels? Because I know you respect the hell out of Shawn Michaels, and, you know, Is this part of the new Ric Flair that we're seeing?
No, I'm going to tell you, first of all, I just said what I said, I meant because he hurt my feelings. Not because I'm questioning who he is as a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jim Ross, I called up Jim Ross and said, cuss him out. But, you know, Jim was telling the truth. When you open yourself up to something like that 30 for 30, you're taking the good and the bad. You know what I mean? And that's what it is. I didn't like what my own kids said about me. But, you know, because you think, and anybody that knows me knows that if I have it in my pocket, it's theirs. And I can assure you they all led great lives. Was I there? No. But here's the deal. If you think the kids, and they do, it's a tough schedule to this day, an extremely tough schedule. But you can't even compare it to not going home for 3 months to 4 months, literally. And then going to Mexico and staying down there and flying from Mexico. I mean, that story I tell over and over again where I was in Florida all week long, wrestling Barry for an hour, and then double shots with Barry and Rotundo for an hour each one, Billy Jack an hour, Dusty an hour, you know, and then having to fly to Japan knowing that I had to get off the plane and wrestle Jumbo for an hour, Tenryu for an hour, and Jumbo three separate nights. I completely broke down. I drank. I wrestled Butch Reed for an hour in a cage. Here's Eddie Graham. In the old the aluminum building, sports arena in Orlando, 1 hour in a cage, 110 degrees, and you can't use the cage as a weapon. Okay, Eddie. Thank you.
Got to get kind of creative in that 60 minutes.
I mean, that was Eddie. He just came up with everything, right? And now I put a blade on every finger I had in my hand. And all of a sudden, Butch Reed's head became harder than Bobo Brazil's. Hey, I wrestled Bobo for an hour. Are you kidding me? You guys. There's a method for this madness, you know.
I'm sure there's been more than one wrestler that 45 minutes into the match was probably begging you to please pin me so we can end this match.
Oh, God, many. But you couldn't. I mean, it just – hey, listen, I was begging myself then. Hey. Hey, it's like this, the deal with the title reigns, right? So – New Zealand, right? Having fun with Harley Race. Who doesn't have fun when you travel with Harley? And anybody that didn't, believe me, guys, he was the real world champion. He looks at me and he goes, we're sold out in Auckland. He goes, hey, Rick, the Christchurch tomorrow night's going to be in a light. Let's do, I can't think of the promoter's name, Steve Ricard. Let's do Steve a favor, and we'll switch the title tonight, and I'll give it back to you tomorrow. What do you think? And then he pulls on Tomorrow World. And I go, oh, okay, Harley, but what if they find out? I'll handle it. I go, don't worry. Okay.
Rick,
the
man,
next
day
they're calling the next day because who was there that they came on the trip with Paul Bosch of all people called either I think Geiger was the president then. They're screaming at me, and I said to him, I said, you know what? Why don't you scream at Harley? Good luck with that. Yeah, see how that works for you. Okay, I just hung up. He goes, his last words were like, after he switches again, he goes, I told you I'd handle it. I said, what did you handle? What did you handle? Then still screaming at me.
Rick, you're awesome, man. We love when you come on. You are truly the greatest of all time. We love you. And
thank you.
Thank you so much for the time, as always.
Thank you, guys. And much respect to you. And, you know, I just feel honored that you guys, I mean, I can't respect everything as you get older. And to have your respect means a lot. So thank you so much.
Rick, as always, a pleasure talking to you, and I'm so glad that you're feeling well, and I hope to see you soon. Thank you very much for coming on, brother.
Oh, thank you guys very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Catch us weekdays on Busted Open from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM, Fight Nation Channel 156, The Busted Open Podcast.